unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are recleanable, black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a two-pack.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, right now we're hoping we'll have Jerry Smith back on the line just a moment here, and apparently they have a very, very heavy snowstorm back in the east. We'll be with Jerry in just a few moments, but right now, of course, Jerry is certainly our resident expert on weather modification. I've known Jerry. We met him at a number of meetings, and he writes extensively on, he has a book on the HAARP, the ultimate weapon of the conspiracy. And then his book on weather modification are really so vitally important that you have this information. Here in California, we've had a tremendous heat spell. In the rest of the country, we've had pretty severe snowstorms, much more severe than ever before. Why has this happened? Is somebody playing with the weather? We do not know, because it's all top secret. But we do know that they have the ability to create storms, and they have the ability to create droughts. How do we know that? Well, first of all, because back in the early 1970s, Zygmunt Brzezinski wrote a book which is called Between Two Ages. And in the footnotes of that book, between about pages 55 and 65, of course, he wrote, they will find the footnote there talking about how 30 years in the future that we're going to be able to create storms and droughts and new diseases that will disable the enemy. Of course, you and I are the enemy. We have all those diseases that they have actually created here in the United States, all created by genetic engineering of viruses and bacteria. But what's so interesting about the book is you try to get it on Amazon. The cheapest copy I could find 2 days ago was $57. This is the little book that paperback, sold for $6 or $7 initially. The cheapest ones, and they've only got a couple of them, $57. Well, let's go right now to our good friend, Jerry. Hi, Jerry. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Good to be back with you.
Well, we were just talking about weather modification, and, of course, we don't know whether they're doing it or whether it's just happening.
Well, we do know that they are doing it. The question is, when and where are they doing it?
All right, fine. Well, I will agree with that. We know that they've even signed a treaty, a United Nations treaty, promised not to use it on our enemies. Maybe it's all right to use it on our people, though, but you pick up the story. How did you get interested in weather modification? How do we know it's really true?
Wow. Well, that's a very multi-headed question. I got interested in the subject when I was writing my book on HAARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, which is a field of antennas on the ground in southeastern Alaska, so linked together as to work as one giant antenna, and is today the world's largest radio broadcasting station. But as you know, it's not designed to broadcast for human ears. It's designed to inject radio frequency energy into a spot at the very top of the atmosphere. And the amount of energy we're talking about here, this is amazing. The field can output 3.6 million watts, which is 72,000 times more powerful than the largest legal AM radio station in the U.S.
No, is that million or billion?
It's million coming out of the field.
All
but right. The cool thing is that when you inject it into the very top of the atmosphere, a region called the ionosphere, this is a very electrically active zone, and radio frequency energies get bumped up. They get magnified. So the effective radiated power, the amount of actual energy hitting that spot, is is between 3 and 4 billion watts.
Okay, fine. So we're going to be back in just a moment with Jerry Smith as we're analyzing the ability that they have to modify the weather. But, ladies and gentlemen, it's all top secret. We can't let the American people know what's going on. Why, after all, it might help old Osama bin Laden living over there in a cave. We're here to protect you. We're from the government. Well, this is Dr. Stan at Radio Liberty. Our guest today is Jerry Smith, and Jerry's written a couple of books which we carry through our ministry. One is called Weather Modification, the other is called HARP, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. Is that the right title?
The first book is HARP, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy.
Right.
And the second book is Weather Warfare, the Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature.
All right, fine. Weather Warfare, well, you can get it by asking for it, and we carry both of these books because we think they're important. And Jerry was telling me that he got interested in this subject of weather modification when he was actually in the process of doing the research for his book on HARP, which is a top secret military a program, and of course they have their antennas there in Alaska, and of course they can beam several million watts of electricity. In other words, they can focus at that, so you have an intensity of that in their ionosphere. And why would they want to do that?
Well, this is something lovely that they call ionospheric enhancement. Now, injecting that much energy into a small region at the top of the atmosphere heats it by several thousand degrees to the point where the molecules literally explode. You got to love the military. Only they would think blowing something up makes it better. Now, when the molecules explode, this does two things. It releases a packet of energy which includes a stream of ELF, extremely low frequency radio waves, which penetrate deep into the earth and deep into the sea. And the United States Navy has been using this to communicate with deeply submerged submarines for about 15 years now. The other side of this is that the atmosphere is converted into a plasma. Plasma is the fourth state of nature of matter. A plasma is an electrically charged gas, and because it's at the very top of the atmosphere, it goes out into space. Side note, this means every time they use HARP, we throw away a chunk of our atmosphere. I think that's a dumb idea. So this plume goes out into space and keeps going until it runs into something to stop it, which is the magnetic lines of force of the Earth's magnetic field. And it gets trapped between the magnetic lines of force and spreads out, forming a barrier of electrically charged gas that anything electrical moving through will be disrupted or destroyed. It is a ground-based Star Wars weapon system. But, of course, the folks working on it deny that completely. And you said HARP is top secret. It's not exactly top secret. They pretend it's civilian science. And so it has a website, and you can read all about it, and there's...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Jerry here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Jerry Smith, and we're talking about his book on weather warfare, and of course the fact that there's a website on HARP. You can read about it, but they're not telling what it's really about. And have you ever wondered why our military leaders, knowing full well that the Russians have several thousand nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missiles, and what we have to defend us is something like six anti-ballistic missiles stationed in Alaska? That just isn't logical. I mean, why would you just have six anti-ballistic missiles to protect us against thousands of incoming Soviet missiles, which are nuclear-tipped, which could destroy America tomorrow? And, of course, they have all these secret weapons, but they're not going to tell the American people. Believe me, the Russians know about it. The only people who are really in the dark are the American public. But you pick up the story.
Yes. Fort Greeley is about 26 miles from HARP. All of the United States anti-missile missiles, the missiles designed to shoot down incoming missiles, are at Fort Greely. Now, I don't know the exact number of them at this point in time. The last time I saw a press release on it, they had just taken possession of 17 more missiles, and this was about 2 years ago.
Well, I'm glad to know we've got that. We have about 23 missiles to bring down several thousand intercontinental ballistic missiles.
It's silliness.
And so obviously they're not telling us the truth.
Right. You began with a question about weather modification, manipulation, weather warfare, and how I got interested in it. And so the bottom line here is that the HAARP project is based on a series of patents, and those patents expressly state how this technology could be used to manipulate the weather. So as in researching the HAARP project, I realized that there was a much larger subject out there, The United States Air Force officially maintains that they have no interest in controlling the weather. However, they have invested hundreds of millions of dollars in modifying the atmosphere. Now, to the uninitiated, there doesn't sound like much difference between controlling the weather and modifying the atmosphere. But the cool thing about modifying the atmosphere is that they discovered that if you can modify the atmosphere, you can do a lot more than just control the weather. You can actually make the atmosphere assume a shape, a position, and that you can use that shape to bounce radio off of and bounce radios down, called wave ducting and wave guiding and artificial ionospheric bounce spots. That's just one of the many things that have come out of this research. What we have going on is that science and the military who are funding them, scientists and the military who are funding them, are looking at ways to alter the atmosphere for Department of Defense purposes. I believe this is called weaponizing. And so this is what I got involved in. Started with the HAARP project, and then with the HAARP book, HAARP, the ultimate weapon of the conspiracy, that's about 240 pages of speculations on who would want to do that and why. As I recognize that the military takes orders. The military is like a bulldozer. The bulldozer doesn't decide which pile of dirt to push around. The driver does. And the driver doesn't really decide because he has a work order. His boss decides. And so the military is just the bulldozer. They do what they're told. So I looked above the military, who could be telling them to do these sorts of things. And so, again, the HAARP book is speculations on who and why. After 7 years of intensive research on this, I released another book that's 400 pages of what I can prove. No more speculation. Now we get to the nitty-gritty of what can actually be proved. And it's amazing what can be proved. We know, without any doubts or reservations, it is now an established fact that the United States government used weather as a weapon during the Vietnam War. This was called Operation Popeye, the Project Popeye. Project Popeye was an attempt to extend the monsoon season over Southeast Asia by cloud seeding over the Ho Chi Minh Trail in hopes of turning the Viet Cong resupply route into a hopeless quagmire of mud. The program was ongoing from 1968 to 1972 at the very least. The program flew more than 4,700 sorties to release, 2,600 sorties to release 47,000 units of cloud seeding material over four countries, North and South Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, the latter two in violation of international law. Operation Popeye ran at an operational cost of about $21.6 million, and it led to congressional investigation in which the then Secretary of Defense, Melvin Laird, lied to Congress and told them, no, we're not doing this. You still with me, Dr. Stan?
I certainly am, and of course, why should we be surprised they lied? What they say, in warfare, the first casualty is the truth. And of course, they lie to the American people, they lie to Congress. They cannot let the public know what they're really doing. And a lot of it is simply experiments.
And as you mentioned, that investigation led to a UN treaty banning weather as a weapon. That treaty is called the Convention on the Prohibition a military or any other hostile use in the environmental modification techniques. That treaty is a complete piece of junk. It's laughably inane. There are 273 members of the UN. So far, only 70 have signed the treaty. You are protected by the treaty only if you sign it. Also, if you don't sign it, you can violate it all you like. And again, with most, with virtually all of these international treaties, what you you agree to not use a technology against your neighbor, but that never prevents you from using it against your own people.
Right, and of course, that is the question: is are they modifying our weather? And of course, there's a great deal of evidence that suggests we are. Certainly, we've seen one of the coldest winters of all time. We've seen all sorts of strange weather patterns developing. Now, these could be simply acts of God. We do not know because, of course, it's secret, but we do know they have the capacity to do it. And we do know from the Zygmunt Brzezinski's writings, remember Zygmunt Brzezinski was the foreign policy advisor to both President Carter and President Barack Obama. So we know that Zygmunt Brzezinski is, you know, really right up there. He's one of the leaders of the elite who rule the world. And the fact
and the evidence is often in your local newspaper. Virtually most of America has some form of weather modification ongoing at county or regional levels. There are water control boards, particularly in the West and the Midwest, particularly the Great Plains. Kansas, Nebraska have ongoing hail suppression and precipitation enhancement programs all throughout the growing season in which they hire cloud seeders to come in and seed clouds to make them rain before they turn into hail and destroy crops. In China today, there are 35,000 people employed full-time as weather managers, primarily massaging the weather over croplands to prevent hail and to increase precipitation. This is, if you remember the Summer Olympics last year, the head of the Chinese bureaucracy doing this had several press conferences early on in 08, February and so on, to promote the fact that she was could guarantee perfect weather for opening day of the Olympics, and she came through on her promise. And having perfect weather for the Olympics was a significant feat because that's the rainy season in China, and they made it to not rain for opening day using a technology that the Russians had developed 30 years earlier because, you know, the big Russian celebration, the big Soviet celebration was the May Day parade. And May 1st in Moscow, it either rains or snows up until they develop the technology to make it stop doing that. This is all very well established facts. I mean, this is the sort of thing. And again, in your local newspaper, if your regional planning commission meets to go over regional water issues, this technology will come up because you're funding it.
Well, I think it's fascinating, and of course we never talk about it. The major media doesn't cover this because they're not supposed to. That's certainly, it would be a great subject for CBS or for 2020. Now, have they ever done anything, to your knowledge, a program to try to let the American people know about these amazing programs that the military's developed?
Well, it goes and fits and starts. Up to the United States signing that UN treaty I mentioned, which was 1978. Between the 1950s and 1978, many magazines ran state-of-the-art, you know, we are about to control the weather stories. Collier's, Time, Look, Life, they all were in on it. And the United States federal government was spending between $40 and $140 million a year developing environmental modification technologies. And then we signed the treaty, and the federal budgets went to zero, and the major media shut up. Now, I think there is a connection here. I think Uncle Sam told the major media that this would be a subject better not mentioned because we Uncle Sam got his fingers caught in the cookie jar in Vietnam, and he didn't want that to happen again. And they moved this technology out of congressional scrutiny into civilian contractors, where it is now, with companies like Weather Modification Incorporated of Fargo, North Dakota.
In fact, I even looked it up on the Internet, Weather Modification Incorporated is there, and they will, you go to their website, they'll tell you they can change the weather for you. But we're not supposed to know about that sort of thing. And what they do, of course, is they'll steal the weather, steal the rain, the moisture in the clouds, you know, and precipitate it out over the Rockies. So that means that then, of course, you can produce a drought in the eastern part of the United States. It's a but, of course, then what happens with the crops? I mean, is there anybody who's really thinking about the implications of what's going on? We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Terry, go ahead, pick the story up there.
Certainly. But there are a lot of players domestically in this weather modification, climate change game. I've lived 18 out of the last 22 years in Reno, Nevada. And in Reno, Nevada, we have University of Nevada, Reno, where I did a lot of the research. And a part of the university system in Nevada is DRI, Desert Research Institute. They don't just research deserts. In fact, their largest single contingent is in Antarctica. What DRI does is a great number of things, including they have platforms on the tops of the high Sierras that are cloud seeders that whenever it looks like moisture is going over the Sierras, they fire these things off. And they actually have, last time I looked a couple years ago, they had webcams on them so that during the day you could actually watch the cloud seeders live in real time do their work. We mentioned Weather Modification Incorporated in Fargo, North Dakota. Among their clientele are the ski resorts of Sun Valley, Idaho. And they work throughout the winter to increase the snowpack, to get the ski resorts there open sooner and stay open longer.
But what happens then to the farmers there in the Midwest who are depending upon that moisture, of course, too, so they can grow their crops?
It is a very delicate balance. It is an issue that has been unresolved in the U.S. courts for 130 years. The commercial use of artificial rainmaking actually started in the 1890s. With the rainmakers of the 1890s came into existence because in 1880, a United States general took out a patent on artificial rainmaking technology. In 1890, the United States government tested it and said, yeah, this works. Under the right conditions, you can artificially induce rain. 1895, there was a vast drought across the across the Western Plains, Kansas, Nebraska, and an army of rainmakers turned up, and many of them were very successful. And there were a number of court cases, a number of challenges. Things like, if I make it rain where I am, and you're downwind of me, and it doesn't rain where you am, have I stolen your rain? How much of your rain have I stolen? Who has standing to sue? If you can sue me, how much can you sue me for? Can you quantify this? And the United States mainstream meteorological community has refused to weigh in on this because they can't quantify it. They cannot say exactly how much rain got stolen. So they go, it didn't happen. So the mainstream scientific community has kept its head safely in the sand so as not to be sued. And this has been a big problem across the world. You ask about the downstream problem. My favorite example of this is China. As I mentioned, China has 35,000 weather managers working full-time to massage the weather over mainland China. They've been doing this for more than a decade. Downwind of China is North Korea. And North Korea has been in a drought for most of a decade. That's because China has been stealing North Korea's rain for a decade.
Well, I think there's so much here that really people need to hear about, and they're just not going to get it through the regular channels. So this is why I appreciate so much your coming on with us. And when we bring our stations back on board, I really want to get a little bit into this, the background of how they learned they could modify the weather.
Certainly.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry was just telling us a fascinating story that there have been lawsuits going back 130 years about weather modification and its impact, because, of course, if you were to actually pull the moisture out of the atmosphere over the Rockies, then as the clouds move east, they don't have any clouds because the moisture is all gone. And so the background of this really is amazing. Apparently, some of the people in the military and the artillery noted that after a great battle, where there was a lot of smoke created by the explosions of the munitions, that very often, immediately after that particulate matter went into the atmosphere, that there would be rainstorms. Isn't that pretty well how this whole idea of weather modification began, Jerry?
Very close. The initial theory was it came out of an artillery battery general who ran an artillery battery for the Confederacy. He noticed that after he and many others had noticed that after great battles there were great rainstorms. Now, his theory, because he was an artilleryman, was that it was the concussions, it was the changes in pressure that had caused the rain. As you noted, we now know that it was indeed the smoke and dust of the battle that produced nucleating particles, essentially an early form of cloud seeding. That General Ruggles, got the first patent issued in 1880. In 1890, the United States government decided to test this, and the Secretary of Agriculture sent a team to the State Plains of Texas, who mimicked a battle. They had balloons and cannons and created a mock battle to test the theory, and indeed got rain. And after a couple of weeks of working on it, the head of the project sent back to Washington that it had been successful, that under the right circumstances you could indeed artificially induce rain. 5 years later, we have the great drought across the Western Plains, and a veritable army of rainmakers turned up, each with their own theories and so forth. Between 1880 and 1900, there were hundreds of articles and scores of patents taken out on a variety of technologies, most of which were laughed off by the mainstream media as just being nonsense. One story that comes to mind that I think rather illuminating of the sort of problems you can have from this: 1919, the city of San Diego was in a major drought, and they hired a rainmaker named Hatfield. It had not rained in San Diego for like 4 months. It's sweltering heat, not a cloud in the sky. Hatfield comes in, and within 24 hours, the sky opens up in torrential downpours that last for a couple of weeks. And indeed, streams overflowed their banks. A couple of dams broke, and several people were killed. The city of San Diego was horrified and righteously indignant at the tremendous overproduction, and refused to pay Hatfield and ran him out of town on a rail. Now, we know that China had a similar runaway weather problem last winter. At the beginning of winter, they got the worst storms ever recorded. This could just be global warming, or it could be that their weather managers had a runaway on their hands, like Hatfield did.
Well, now, what about steering hurricanes? Can you make a hurricane worse? Can you make a hurricane better? Can you change the direction of a hurricane?
Apparently, you can. The control of hurricanes has been the holy grail of weather modifiers since the 1950s. In fact, before. The very first attempt to modify a hurricane was 1949. This was Project Cirrus. And Project Cirrus, in 1947, the modern technology of cloud seeding was invented by Dr. Bernard Vonnegut, little brother of Kurt Vonnegut Jr., the famed novelist. But Bernard figured out that the perfect nucleating particle would be something that would be extremely moisture-friendly and would be able to attach a great deal of moisture to itself so that the moisture would grow into a raindrop and become too heavy to stay aloft and fall as rain. He discovered that silver iodide was the perfect nucleating particle in 1947. In 1949, a group of scientists from General Electric decided to try their own version of using dry ice. And the GE scientists and some Navy guys flew out to a hurricane that was in the Atlantic, safely well out to sea off the Georgia coast, and dumped their dry ice into the hurricane. Moments later, the hurricane abruptly changed direction and came on shore near Savannah, Georgia, leaving 1,400 people homeless and killing a couple of people. The Navy's response was to instantly slap it all under a cloak of security and classified all the paperwork.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Smith. Jerry, pick up the story. Of course, the Navy, the government, the military are never going to admit that they're responsible for something, a major catastrophe, and really think of the financial implications of the deaths and the other things. So we'll just say it never happened. It's top secret. We can't release the information. We don't want to let Osama bin Laden or whoever it would be at the time. You know what we're doing. That's why we can't let the American people know the truth. So pick up the story.
Yes, national security is the obfuscating device of choice. Whenever anybody in the military wants to keep something secret for whatever reason, they claim national security, and the Navy did that with Project Cirrus, as I said, scientists from GE and the Navy dumped a nucleating particle into a hurricane. It abruptly changed direction, came on shore near Savannah, left 1,400 people homeless, killed a couple people, and the Navy's response was to classify all the paperwork, and the GE's response was to send in the lawyers, who rounded up the scientists and told them to shut up and sit down. And the head of the project, the scientist in charge, was absolutely convinced that it had worked. He had succeeded in steering a hurricane. It went the wrong direction, but at least he moved it. He showed and demonstrated it could be done. Well, because of the desire to avoid lawsuit from wrongful death and destruction of property, he was never permitted to say that in public in his lifetime. This was in his report that got classified. A decade after the Navy classified it, they declassified it, and in doing so, they had a peer review panel that looked over the paperwork and said, no, this didn't do anything. Okay, now you asked the question, is it possible to steer a hurricane? Well, maybe that wasn't convincing. However, Scientific American, which is the great granddaddy of the American Scientific Open Press, if you want to be somebody, if you are a major player in science in America, you want to be in Scientific American. The cover story for, I forget which month now, I think maybe October 2004, was about a scientist and his team of civilian contractors who, using computer modeling, had figured out how to steer a hurricane. They had been working on it for 20 years, at a combination of private and taxpayer dollars.
Hold that thought, Jerry. We'll be back here in just a moment with Jerry Smith. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, is Jerry Smith, and a fascinating guest. And, of course, we do talk certainly during the breaks. And if you'd like to get a CD or a tape of our entire discussion, they're available. But Jerry's just going into the background, even the article in Scientific American, talking about how they really can steer hurricanes. Now, before we go on, Jerry, I'd like you to get your website out and tell people, you know, how they can get your book. Of course, we do carry two of your books. One is, of course, the Weather Warfare, and the other is HAARP, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. But if you'd like to get your website out, you go right ahead.
All right, Dr. Stan. Yes, do buy my books from Dr. Stan. That would be lovely. The two books are Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, and HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. My website has a tremendous wealth of information on it. It's not just a try my product ad. You will find a section on each of my books which includes reviews of the book, articles on the subject, the bibliography of the book. The weather warfare bibliography in the book is 32 pages long. I've got about 25 pages of the bibliography on the website. There's a lot of information so that you can follow and do your own due diligence and continue your own homework. My name is Jerry E. Smith. That's Jerry with a J, J-E-R-R-Y, middle initial E, last name Smith. And oddly enough, my website is jerryesmith.com. And it's not case sensitive, and there's no punctuation or underscoring in it. It's just Jerry, J-E-R-R-Y-E-S-M-I-T-H.com.
All right, fine. Of course, we're just talking about the amazing things that now scientifically they can do, and they apparently can steer hurricanes towards land or away from land, hopefully away from land because they can really do so much devastation. Can they attenuate the hurricanes? In other words, decrease the intensity of the wind, the speed of the wind?
Yes. Scientific American Magazine 2004, I forget which month offhand, had the cover story of Dr. Ross Hoffman and his team had figured out how to steer hurricanes. The idea of attenuating the strength of a hurricane, reducing the wind speeds, was Project Storm Fury, which ran for almost 30 years. Project Storm Fury learned from Project Cirrus not to mess with hurricanes that might in any way get anywhere near the U.S. So over the more than 20 years of operation, they only actually got to play with 8 hurricanes that were safely far enough away from the U.S. And, you know, with a speed skater, when she's spinning and her arms are down, she's spinning at her fastest. And as she raises her arms, she slows down. And the object of Project Storm Fury was to seed the eye wall out and force the eye wall to reform at a greater distance and slow down the spinning of the hurricane. And they got reductions better than half the time. Of the 8 hurricanes, 2 it was inconclusive. 3 they got 15% reduction of wind speed, and 3 they got 35% reduction in wind speed. So they dropped one from a Category 4 to a Category 1. Another one they dropped a Category 3 to a Category 1. So they demonstrated the possibilities of doing this, but they got hit with the whole federal shutdown following the U.S. becoming signatory to the international treaty banning weather as a weapon. When Uncle Sam closed the account, these guys were working under NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, a directly federally funded, which means with congressional oversight, and they just got their budget cut to zero.
Now, what about chemtrails? What part do chemtrails play? Are chemtrails real? Do they play any part in this?
I really don't want to go into chemtrails with only 20
fine.
Minutes left.
All right, fine.
Let me back up. There's another aspect of hurricanes here. Now, there's another thing of, is it possible to create hurricanes on demand? The Russians say they can do it. You may remember, when the Soviet Union, before the Soviet Union broke up, as I mentioning earlier, the Russians had figured out how to prevent it from raining on their May Day parade by developing a weather modification technology that prevented it from raining at least for a few hours. The Russians were very big on developing this sort of technology. This is how the Chinese did it for opening day of the Olympics. They used the Russian technology. Well, when the Soviet Union broke up, that bureaucracy spun itself off as a for-profit company called Elate Technologies. Now, you may remember in 1998, there were massive forest fires burning out of control in Southeast Asia, particularly Malaysia and Indonesia. The Elate Technologies went to those folks and told them, we have the ability to create hurricanes on demand. Now, in the Atlantic Ocean, they're called hurricanes. In the Indian Ocean, they're called monsoons. in the Pacific Ocean, they're called cyclones. So the Russians said, we can create a cyclone and use it to blow out your forest fires. Indonesia didn't buy it, didn't believe them, but Malaysia did. And Malaysia ponied up a never-disclosed amount of money, and the Russians whooped up their big wind and indeed created a cyclone out of nothing and pushed it into the forest fires and blew out the forest fires. They also flattened a lot of villages and left a lot of people homeless. That's what cyclones do. We may have seen this technology used in war. If you remember Gulf War I lasted, what was it, 56 hours? Gulf War II, the Allies expected to be in Baghdad by Wednesday. And what happened? The moment the Allies launched, a big wind came up. The strongest winds in 100 years. The worst sandstorms ever seen. And it nailed down the Allied advance for 3 weeks. I can't prove it, but I suspect that Saddam Hussein went to his old friends, the Russians, and said, can you guys buy me some running time? And they came back with, how much cash do you have?
Well, we'll probably never know, but a lot of questions are out there, and I have no question that they know how to modify the weather. Well, if you're out there and you have a question for Jerry, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295, and I've read his book. I'll tell you, it's very provocative. We think that there's a great deal of information. We've accumulated information on our own. The fact that most people have never even heard of this, a treaty that was signed in 1978, where the countries of the world agreed not to use weather modification as a method of warfare. Well, why bother to sign a treaty if you don't have the weapon? And, of course, they had the weapon, and, of course, it had been used in Vietnam, and that was the thing. They wanted, of course, to bring the monsoons on so that they could just, you know, turn the Ho Chi Minh Trail into mud, and that's pretty well what they did, isn't it?
Exactly. And the international treaty doesn't just ban using weather. It bans using any environmental process, including setting off volcanoes or inducing earthquakes or tsunamis. And that might sound absolutely crazy to begin with, but let me give you a quote from the beginning of my book. William S. Cohen, who was the United States Secretary of Defense, was speaking at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and U.S. strategy in 1997. So you can take this as official United States position. The United States believed in 1997, quote, others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism, whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts. Now, that's on the very first page of my book, and my book, Weather Warfare, is a 400-page examination of whether or not that was a true statement.
All right, let's go to Kathy, who's calling us from Oregon. Hi, Kathy. What part of Oregon are you in?
Springfield.
Well, it's good to have you with us. Are you listening on shortwave or the Internet?
Internet.
All right, finally, I have a question for our guest.
Well, I have two comments I wanted to ask about the big flood in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and the whole Mississippi Delta there, and then the Yellowstone Caldera and the 900 little earthquakes that are happening in that area. If the guest there thinks that that has something to do with this weather modification.
All right, because do you want to tackle either one of those, Jerry?
Well, let me take up Yellowstone and the super volcano issue. One of the frightening things about using environmental modification as a weapon is that Mother Nature gives great credible deniability. It's almost impossible to find out if a natural disaster is really natural or not. The only way you can really get this is if you can eliminate all possible natural explanations, then you have to look at an unnatural explanation. I believe that something has been generating a giant, massive, high-pressure dome over the southeastern United States for the last 3 hurricane seasons so as to prevent hurricanes from coming on shore. There has been this parked, stationary high-pressure dome through the 2006, 7, and 8 hurricane seasons. Six, no hurricanes made landfall. 7, no hurricanes made landfall. 8, 2 hurricanes made landfall outside of the zone of the pressure dome. Now, the problem is that, you know, if somebody's actually generating this thing to defend the U.S. against hurricanes, why aren't they taking credit for it? Well, under the high-pressure dome, you had tremendous heat, drought, people dying from the heat, wildfires, homes destroyed, and so on. So there would be this litigation factor, and so nobody's claiming it. Now, one of the problems is, as Secretary Cohen said, this can be done with electromagnetic waves, with radio waves. And there's a lot of indications that something like HAARP, which is designed to bathe the world, at least the northern half of the world, in extremely low-frequency radio waves, which penetrate deep into the earth, I mean kilometers deep, you can induce earthquakes. There have been a number of earthquakes that are extremely suspicious, that have very, very odd signatures to them, including the 2004 Asian tsunami, the recent big Japanese earthquake last year, a couple of big Chinese earthquakes in the 70s. These things may well have been electromagnetically induced. Now, whether or not Yellowstone is in that, again, there's no way to know at this point whether it's just cranky Mother Nature or somebody tickling her with an electromagnetic feather. What we do know is that Yellowstone is one of the supervolcanoes on this planet. There are two of them in North America. One is the Long Valley Caldera, which is the Mammoth Mountain June Lakes area of California, and the other is Yellowstone. And we know that the Yellowstone one goes off approximately every 600,000 years, and the last time it went off was 640,000 years ago, so it's a little on the overdue side. This may simply be Mother Nature rumbling, rolling over in her sleep. Or it could be the amount of electromagnetic waves hitting the area are shaking it up. And it's very possible that somebody on the other side of the planet is tickling Old Faithful just to see if they can take out the U.S. We may never know the answer to these speculations.
Well, we have a lot of enemies out there, Kathy. We've got a lot of enemies. And there's many uncertainties, and this all entirely speculation. But God bless. Thanks so much for calling. And we're going to have to go to Dan. Bye-bye. We're going to go to Dan calling from Pennsylvania. Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Hello. How are you doing, Dr.
Doing
Dan?
Fine. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. We're talking about this, the HAARP and everything like that, right? And it's amazing that I've followed this from Art Bell started talking about this back in the 90s,
right.
And I'm very intrigued. I want to ask your guest, what is going to be the backlash? Because if there's a flare from the sun comes, all bets are off. Is there a backlash that man is messing with Mother Nature, as it were?
You know, that old adage, you shouldn't fool with Mother Nature? What do you think about that? I think that's a very legitimate question.
I think that was a butter commercial. It's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
You're absolutely right.
the question of is there a backlash, it's probably more a philosophical question than it is a scientific technical question. The folks who are promoting and promulgating the idea of Gaia, that the Earth is a living creature, are absolutely convinced that Earth, the living creature, is doing whatever she needs to do to stay alive, and that if we are tickling her in an inappropriate way, she will tickle back. And from a technical point of view, it's funny. The science that I know, I'm a geologist. If you want to talk about my specialty is volcanism and plate tectonics. So if you want to talk about subduction zones and igneous intrusions, I'm with you.
I can understand those things. Do you know a man by the name of Jim McKenney?
Yes.
Okay, I've listened to him. He's on the Science Hour every Thursday night on shortwave.
Right.
Very extremely interesting person.
Okay, let's get Jerry to respond, because we got another people on the line. Go ahead, Jerry.
McKinney has some very interesting ideas. He's one of those renegade scientists who has gone outside the paradigm and annoys mainstream no end. And there are an awful lot of really good people working outside the paradigm. My advice to your listeners would be to take mainstream with several bags of salt, and the boat rockers with just a few pinches of salt, because it's the boat rockers who are going to give us the new paradigm for this century.
And I think we do not know the motives of, well, we know the motives of the people who are working behind the scenes, but they work in the shadows. And we do know that, according to Baczynski, 30 years ago, about 1970 or 71, he said we would be able to create storms and droughts. Hey, thanks so much for calling, Dan. Let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Mike, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I'm curious about the location that they chose for HAARP there in Alaska. Do you have any ideas of why they chose that?
Yeah, there are half a dozen reasons. Initially, the purpose of the project was to be a giant white elephant to sell natural gas. The project was created by ARCO, the energy giant who owns most of the North Slope oil field. And they hired Dr. Bernard Eastland and his team to come up with some crazy scheme that would sell natural gas, natural gas does not pump across the wasteland of Alaska the way oil does.
And I think basically they utilized that to generate the electricity.
That was the plan, was to come up with something requiring a lot of electricity that would need a lot of gas to run the turbines. That never happened. But in terms of military, the defense of the lower 48,
we're going to have to interrupt you there. We're going to have to go to break. Thanks very much, Mike. Well, Jerry, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us. It's been a fascinating program. I want you to know I've really enjoyed it, so go right ahead.
Okay. Well, your last caller asked about the location of HAARP, and there's a number of technicals in terms of the purpose of the thing is to tweak something called the auroral electrojet. Which is a river of electricity that flows around the North Pole. And so they had to be under it in order to be able to tweak it. I could go on and on, but with only a couple of minutes left, let me just say that I would really like to have your listeners visit my website and read the material I have that will direct them to their further researches so they can do their due diligence and learn more about this subject. And, of course, buy copies of Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, and HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy from Radio Liberty.
Well, Jerry, I think I appreciate your putting the plug in, certainly. The website, again, is
JerryEsmith.com, JerryEsmith.com.
All right, JerryEsmith.com, and certainly Jerry's on the front lines of this. He's done a lot of great research on this. Is there anything new since your book came out as far as the weather being used for military purposes?
Oh, well, there's always odds and ends of things, but, you know, you seldom get it in the mainstream. One of the things that I've been trying to figure out is what happened to the K. Bailey Hutchinson bill that was introduced in 2005, the Weather Modification Research Board Act, which was reintroduced in 2007 as the Weather Mitigation Research and Technology Act. Apparently, it has gotten killed in committee, as it should. I guess that's good news, because it's not on the docket for this Congress. Other than that, there are lots of little bits and pieces out there. You won't see this in the mainstream because it's not the sort of news story that works for the mainstream. In order to get in mainstream news, you have to have good pictures, and you have to be able to reduce it to something really, really, really simple. Have to be able to say it in like 74 seconds. And if you can't get the entire idea across in 74 seconds, it's not going to get in the mainstream media, at least it's not on television. And newspapers only deal with local. And so it has to be a local story. Your local water control board deciding to hire Weather Modification Incorporated, Fargo, North Dakota, to do cloud seeding over your area.
Hey, we're out of,
newspaper.
We're out of time, Jerry. Bye-bye. God bless. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope you enjoyed our interviews with Jerry Smith, and I consider Jerry a friend, and we've met him many times and talked with him at great length. We carry his book, Weather Warfare, that's Weather Warfare, and then his other book, HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. We've got a great DVD put out by our friend Bob Pletcher on Weather as a Weapon. We have actually a four-tape set on weather modification. We have a four-tape set on HARP, the High Altitude Auroral Research Project. And then, of course, we have the two four-tape sets on chemtrails. And we could probably do several of the programs on chemtrails with Jerry. He's got a lot of information. But basically, all of this is highly classified. We cannot let Osama bin Laden know what we're doing. That's why we can't tell the American people. So, like, you know, they've given $2 trillion, that's T, terrible, Tom, trillion dollars away. Ben Bernanke has given away $2 trillion from the Fed. We don't know where we're at. But it's a national security issue. We cannot let the American people know where the money's going. Well, I will tell you where it's going. We're seeing the greatest transfer of wealth in the history of mankind. They're going to impoverish the American people. That's what this is all about. And if once they've impoverished the American people, they'll be willing to go along with the ultimate plan, the New World Order, the New World Economic System, the New World Currency, and the New World Religion, because behind everything are powerful spiritual forces. Now, if you haven't yet read my November and December 2008 newsletters, they're posted up on the web. That's November and December 2008 at RadioLiberty.com. Go up and pull them down. It tells you about the invisible government who really runs America. We have a visible government, you see. And the congressmen, and they go back and they make speeches and they vote. But the invisible government doesn't obey the laws. Suddenly, Mr. Geithner, the new Secretary of the Treasury, he didn't bother to pay his taxes. Tom Daschle, who incidentally did drop out today. He was going to be in charge of health, education, and welfare. He didn't pay his taxes. There are different laws for the elite and for you and me. Both of them come from the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations. Mr. Geithner is also a member of the Bilderbergers and the group of 30, the 30 people who run the finances of the world. If you don't believe me, go up on the Internet. And, of course, you can read about the group of 30 there. They don't quite tell you what they're doing, but they'll tell you about them, who they're there. Six of this group of 30 are members of the Trilateral Commission. There's only 87 American members of the Trilateral Commission. And they've really controlled the Obama regime. At least 11 of them are in key positions in the Obama regime. And of course, Hillary Clinton's husband, Bill, was a member of the Trilateral Commission. A little group of people who determine the destiny of our country, and they are intent upon destroying our economy. That's why they absolutely refused to go after the foreclosing loans to buy up the collateralized debt obligation bonds that have been created and sold throughout the world. If they solve the problem, why there wouldn't be a problem? They need that problem to justify bringing about the New World Order. If you haven't read Henry Kissinger's article, January the 12th in the International Herald Tribune, you need to get it. You need to get our material. You need to get my talk on the financial tsunami. I gave it about 3 years ago, but it's as true today as it was then. They're going to create the financial crisis to bring about a world government. And only by destroying the economy of the world will the nations of the world be willing to give up their sovereignty and join in. And this is what it's all about, because behind this are powerful spiritual forces. And all you need to do is read the articles, and certainly they're put out by the people in these occult organizations. The common denominator behind all of them, whether the Masons or the Rosicrucians or the people, you know, within the OTO, that was Aleister Crowley's organization, Lucis Trust, they want a world government. Because that has been the plan of the ancient mystery religions. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is RadioLiberty.com. please pray for America. Pray for revival, because if this country doesn't turn back to God, we're going to lose it. And pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.